You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hi, this is Lee Baucom. Thank you for being here. Thanks for listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. We're here to give you the information on how to save and improve your relationship, and you're here because that's where you are. That's what you want to be doing, and I appreciate you being here and listening to that. Today, we want to talk a little bit about how you can move forward, one way of kind of a mindset piece to think through, and one of the things that gets in the way, and I want to start that with a story. This happened several years back. I was at a conference, and at this conference, we were in one of those college rooms, you know, the teaching rooms. You remember the ones where the professor's in the front and the whiteboard's behind them, or the blackboard, depending on how long ago it was that you might have been there. And then each set of tables and chairs goes one up, kind of in a riser pattern. So the people behind you are a little higher and can see above you. And so there I was, sitting about two-thirds of the way back, and that's generally kind of the place that I like to hide out in those rooms. You know, it gives me place in the back so the professor's not going to call on me, and gives me a way of kind of getting out of there if necessary. And if my mind drifts off, you know, I'm not in the front row, not listening. So there I was at a conference, still playing out that same place that where I sat through college and through graduate school, and kind of hung out there. That's generally my place where I am at a conference. And so there I was listening. And the speaker was asking us to participate in an activity. In fact, I would say not asking, but really telling us how this was going to happen. And so in this activity, he had every other row turn around and face the person behind them. So I was on the row that didn't have to turn. The person in front of me turned around, and we smiled at each other and introduced ourselves. It was an older woman, at least older than me, and she was about half my size and less than half my weight. She was a tiny woman and looked a bit frail, but I wasn't too worried about that until I heard the next words out of the speaker's mouth. The speaker asked us to place our elbows on the table about a foot and a half apart and to lock hands, to grab hands. Now I was beginning to be a little bit more nervous about what that was going to look like. You know, at that place, I was holding on in a different way than maybe I was comfortable with this person, because we were in that stance that you know as the arm wrestling stance. We locked hands, and I could feel her kind of tighten against my arm, and I was tightening up against her arm, but I was still kind of trying to smile and take it lightly, because all I could think about was, I'm going to break this person's arm and tear her shoulder out if I'm not careful. I don't know what she was thinking. She was probably thinking, if I'm not careful, he's going to tear my arm off. Or maybe she thought, I can take him. I don't know. But what I do know is the words I was dreading came from the speaker. He said, okay, your task is to touch the back of your partner's hand to the table as many times as possible in the next 1 minute. I was sitting there dreading this moment, but I decided that I was going to score the points. I just wasn't going to score too many. I couldn't just sit there and let the whole time pass. I had too much competitiveness for that, but not so much that I was wanting to hurt her. And so when he said start, I slowly pushed her hand to the table and brought it back up, and slowly pushed the table to the table and brought it back up. And I managed to make it kind of a fair showing without being crushing. I ended up with 15 touches to her 0 touches. So I had managed to win. I had managed to do that without hurting her. And so we smiled at each other, and I said, I hope I didn't hurt you. She said, no, no, I'm fine. And she turned back around, and the speaker said, okay, how many pairs got 50 or more? And I thought, 50 or more? I would have hurt her if I had done that. And one person, one pair in the group had managed 50. So then he said, how many got 40 or more? And one group had managed to get 40 or more. And then he said, I want to remind you of what we told you to do. The goal was to touch your partner's hand to the table as many times as possible. I did not tell you to arm wrestle. I told you to touch the back of the hands. And suddenly it dawned on me. all we had to do was to go back and forth and back and forth, and we both could have scored an equal number of times. We both could have gotten 60 or more easily had we done that. But what we did instead is we locked into mortal combat. We took each other on, even though the directions were not to take each other on, but to cooperate, to do that. There was nothing that kept us from cooperating except for the mental block we had in our head. The assumption we had in our head that the goal was to win, to beat the other person, not to cooperate. Okay, so what does that have to do with you saving your marriage? I have one simple question. Who is the enemy of you saving your marriage? Who's in the way of you saving your marriage? Who is the enemy of that process? Think about that. Who is that? Think about how you've been acting and tell me who you at least have been acting as if is the enemy. Because here's the thing. The enemy of saving your marriage is not your spouse in any way, shape, or form. The enemy is not your spouse. Notice what a subtle change that is when you think about that. It can't be your enemy if you're a partnership. If you're trying to build a we, you can't on the one hand have them as a we and on the other hand be against them and in a struggle to try to see who is going to win. The enemy is not your spouse. The enemy is your spouse's belief system. Your spouse's belief that nothing can happen in the marriage. Your spouse's belief that there is no way that your relationship can continue on. And that's a fundamental piece. When a spouse says, "I want out," fundamental to that is them having a belief that nothing can change in the way things are. Nothing can move forward in the way things are. So what's necessary in their mind is to end that and move away from it so something else can happen in their life, because their belief system, not them, but their belief system is about the fact that nothing can happen. Now, here's the problem with that. We are wired, and I've talked about this in my material, we're wired to look for who is against us, and that's our primary starting point. We have a secondary starting point of looking at who is with us. But our primary starting point is who's against us. We are wired, our brain is wired to look for who the enemy is. At its very core, remember I've talked about that reptilian brain. That reptilian brain is the part of us that is the most primitive part and is looking for who's coming after us, who's the threat. And it is predominant when there is a crisis, when there is a place where we're fearful, it springs up. We find that place where we are most fearful, and we are stuck in that place of looking for who's against us. And so when we go looking for who's against us, in the midst of that struggle, we see a spouse who is opposed to what we want to have happen. And we confuse the fact that they are opposed to what we want to have happen with the fact that they are opposed to us. Remember, that part of the brain is not real good at languaging and distinctions. It's not worried about that. It's worried only about threat. Now, the next layer up of the brain is what's looking for that place of community, connection, and intimacy. It's part of the brain that is how we cooperate with each other, but that's not the primary place when we're in a crisis. We are in fight or flight mode rather than community intimacy mode. And so we are looking for who's against us and who's standing in front of us disagreeing with us, our spouse. And that lures us into a very dangerous place. In the last podcast, I talked about that place of blame versus responsibility, and here we are again. Because blame is about who the other person is. It's out there. We look for who's against us, who's opposing us, and they are to blame for where we are. They're to blame for the fact that we can't get to where we want to, versus responsibility that drives it back to the self, to you. What can I do? People confuse responsibility and blame very frequently, which is why I keep talking about it to clarify it in your head. Blame is about who to point the finger at when you ask the question, whose fault is this? Who did this? Why is this happening? You are caught by blame. Responsibility, on the other hand, looks at the self and says, what can I do given where we are? How can I respond to this in appropriate ways? How can I move forward when I feel like I'm locked? Blame versus responsibility is a crucial thing to see, because blame is about the enemy being the spouse. Responsibility is realizing that in no way, shape, or form is your spouse the enemy. Their belief system is the enemy. And when that happens, suddenly something shifts. You can begin to see that you are about connecting with your spouse, reaching out and having a responsibility to figure out how to deal with that belief system that's stuck, and asking yourself, why is that belief system stuck? What can I do to make a shift in that belief system? Do you notice the shift in yourself when we talk about that? How blame and responsibility change, and how blame is about looking at the other person as the enemy and as what needs to be overcome. Remember in my example, as we're arm wrestling, what we really needed to be was cooperative. Now, what I would have been counting is, you know, how many times I could get her wrist down, but I could have helped her get my wrist down back and forth cooperatively to get to something else. The problem in the way is still the belief system of the other person. So here's what we know about those belief systems. You do not change a belief system with a frontal assault. A direct assault on someone's belief system does not change what they believe. If you don't believe me, look at Washington. On a continual basis, people skilled in diplomacy and skilled in debate and skilled in argumentation find no way of making somebody else change their views, because they do it as a direct frontal assault. They try to use rational arguments, and they try to use coercion, and they try to use force, and all that happens is that they are met with an equal amount of force, of coercion, and of debate. So nothing shifts. What you have to do instead is remove the barriers to seeing something different, to wipe out the barriers that keep somebody from seeing things another way. So for a moment, just pause and think, what are you trying to get to? What are the barriers? What are the beliefs that the barriers are not allowing to have shift? The belief your spouse has is that nothing can change, that there's no way that the relationship can give them what they need, and there's no way to move forward with the relationship. Those are the beliefs that you have to remove the barriers to seeing it differently. And I would argue that to remove the barriers, you're part of that process, is to remove the barriers about the self, about emotional pieces, and about relational pieces. So let's talk about those. First, the self. Changing the possibilities that the other person sees in you. Now, I know this may seem unfair for me to say, okay, it's on you, but I want to remind you this is about responsibility. What can you do? Not do you have to take blame, but what can you do where you are? We all live smaller than we need to. We all live smaller than we should. And we all live smaller than we could. So this changing the self is saying, you know what, I'm going to show up with my full self. What happened to your dreams, your hopes, your expectations? Generally, what happens to those for people is the day-to-day life crushes them down and covers them over. And yet, what makes you most amazing are your hopes, dreams, and expectations that you keep moving forward. When you lose sight of them, you lose that piece of yourself. You lock away the dynamic piece of yourself. You lock away that piece of showing up, and you start covering it up with lots of other things. You try to tamp it down. I firmly believe that one of the roots of addiction, there are lots, but one of the roots of addiction is to keep us from having to notice the places where we are no longer showing up and no longer pursuing our dreams and our hopes and our expectations. that the part of the way we deal with that, however it is, whether it's drugs or alcohol or sugar or caffeine or watching too much media or some other gambling or any other way of distracting ourselves, is we're distracting ourselves from the fact that we are not moving our lives forward. And so one of the places that you can take responsibility is saying, how can I get more into my dreams, my hopes, my expectations? How can I grow my life? How can I move it forward? How can I be more at that place of showing up in life, more fully present, more connected? So then there's the emotional level. One of the things that happens in the midst of a marriage crisis is that our emotions begin to get out of sync. And they play off in kind of in a snowball effect. And so we're negative, our spouse becomes more negative, we become more negative, our spouse becomes more negative, we become more negative, our spouse becomes more negative. And suddenly, whether it's fair or not, a spouse looks at the other person and says, man, you're so negative. It doesn't matter if they are too. They will notice it in the other person. We are so much more quickly to notice a shortcoming in another person than to see it in ourselves and to accept it in ourselves. So part of saying, I'm going to be responsible for this, is not to say, gosh, this is all my fault, but it's to say, how can I change our emotional path? How can I raise our emotions to a higher level? How can I look for places of gratitude, of joy, of contentment? How can I find a place in my life to rise above the negative place of our emotions right now? Remember, emotions are contagions. We catch those emotions from each other. And so we can either decide that we've got to inoculate ourselves from the negative and try to bring in more positive, or we will get sucked into the negative and caught there. Where do you want to live emotionally? Then you begin to activate that in your life. Move towards those emotions. Move towards the gratitude. Look for places where you can be more thankful. Move towards joy. Look for the things that bring you meaning and purpose in your life and embrace those and do more of those. I'm not talking about just in the relationship. It'll spread into the relationship if you're doing that in your life. One of the things that I think we miss out on is that every crisis is a wake-up call to life. It's a way of saying, wow, life is not going the way I expected. What is that telling me about where life needs to go? How can I move in that direction? So say, okay, wake up call. I'm hearing it. I'm not going to hit snooze. I'm going to wake up into my life. I'm going to find places of meaning and purpose. I'm going to move forward. I'm going to embrace life, find things that I'm joyful about, find things that I can be contented about, find things that I can be grateful for on a continual basis. And get away from the fact that it's easy to get dragged into the negative. The negative will consume you unless you fill that space. Think of it kind of as that law of gas law, right? That something will fill the space it's allowed unless you decide to have it less space. The negativity, the negative emotional state, will fill as much of your life as you allow until you say, I'm going to allow it less space, not no space. We all have those points of frustrations and of hurts and pains. And so it's not that it's going to find no space, but less space. We squeeze it down with the other point of that, which is to say, I'm living my life on purpose. We can make a rational decision to pursue that. On automatic, our life will be filled with the negative. But when we take back control and say, I'm not going to let that fill it, I'm going to look for the places of gratitude. Where am I thankful for things in my life? How can I specifically point to those things? Where am I living in a place of purpose and meaning? And when you do that, joy emerges and contentment emerges. And so then we are dealing with that emotional place, because usually when I hear a spouse, I hear them say, why would I want to be connected with this other person? They're so negative. It doesn't matter if they're negative right now. Remember that they might be captured by that contagion. And if we are consistently emotionally at a different place, it will infect the relationship from a positive place. It will unroot the negative and that very dangerous pathogen and replace it with a healthy dose. Okay, and then the relational barriers. What are the relational barriers? And remember how many times I've talked about the dangers of trying to, you know, make a spouse jealous or maybe create some distance, try to somehow use the relationship as a way of manipulation. I've heard people say to me, well, don't you think I should stay away from them because absence makes the heart grow fonder? And what I always say is a fond heart grows fonder, but a hurt heart moves further away when you have that distance. Distance can feel good when it's a hurt heart. Absence makes the heart grow fonder requires there to be fondness already there. And relationally, if you are in that struggle, don't use this time to make your spouse jealous using another person. Now, you might build your life, you know, and do those places of meeting, and they go, wow, that's really cool. That's a good way of doing that. It's about becoming more attractive, creating a more attractive life. But relationally, when you stay distant or when you try to use space or when you try to use jealousy, you're creating relational barriers. And I would suggest you start removing the relational barriers, not adding them, but removing them. Remember that part of what you're doing here is dealing with someone's paradigm, a worldview that they have created. And paradigms don't just change because someone points them out to you. They change because the limiting beliefs begin to change. Those limiting beliefs are the ones you want to look at, your own limiting beliefs. You can't change somebody else's limiting beliefs. You can give them evidence that contradicts their limiting beliefs, and they might see something different. And that's what you want to be doing. But you want to be addressing your limiting beliefs. If you find yourself with limiting beliefs and you're not sure how to change them, grab my new Kindle book at savethemarriage.com/Kindle. That's savethemarriage.com/Kindle. You can find a whole section on how do you change your limiting beliefs. But that's really what you're dealing with here, is the limiting belief that nothing can change. You may have it. Your spouse probably has it. If you're at the process of trying to save the marriage, the nice thing is you've already stepped a little bit beyond that limiting belief. But you can't assault their limiting beliefs. You only can create places of doubt of that belief, and that's what we're doing here. So a couple of things that you can do or not do. One is don't argue. Remember, arguments are frontal assaults. Arguments are trying to attack the other person's belief system. Arguments are based on two different people with two different opinions trying to convince the other person of how right they are, and neither one will move. So don't argue. In my material in the Save the Marriage system, you can find alternatives to arguing, and you really want to focus on how do you get around to the place where you're listening to them, because usually when people start talking about what they believe, they can confront themselves on why that doesn't make sense. So don't get into arguments, and don't get into the reason debate place. Don't try to reason it out with them, because a reason, when you're trying to tell someone, you know, you logically help them understand it, you really are in a debate with them. There's no difference between the reason and debate, except for the difference between whether you're saying it or hearing it, right? And when somebody else is hearing your reasons, all they're hearing is, oh, you're here to debate me. So what you want to be doing is removing the barriers. Do remove the barriers by looking at your own self. How can you move that forward? By looking at the emotional barriers that are there, how can you erase them? How can you create good feelings between the two of you? And relationally, how can you make sure that you're showing up in the relationship? Showing up in your life, showing up in the relationship is going to begin to change your spouse's belief system. And that is when you are addressing the enemy of saving your marriage. Well, now it's your turn. This is when I ask you to give back a little bit and give me some feedback. And I want to do that a couple of ways. One is I want to know what you think about this material, what you think about what I just said. You can find the comment section just below. If you're on my blog and you're listening from the blog, you can just leave a comment there. I do read the comments and I do respond to them. So that's a good way of kind of responding and thinking through and processing the material for yourself. If you are listening to this somewhere else, through iTunes or somewhere else, you can find the blog by going to savethemarriageblog.com. That's just savethemarriageblog.com. That'll get you right on there. You can leave comments directly there. You can also give me some feedback at podcast@savethemarriage.com. That's the email for the podcast, podcast@savethemarriage.com. If you'll let me know some other topics you might want to hear, that's not a place to be writing in about all your situation and trying to get feedback. We have other mechanisms for that. This is really about what would you like to hear about on the podcast. You can also leave a voicemail. by calling four help 44132. That's 4HELP 44132, or the straight number is 443-574-4132. That's 443-574-4132. If you're out of the United States, of course, the beginning code is 1, and you can find us there. So those are some ways of finding me. If you're interested in that Kindle book, again, it's savethemarriage.com/Kindle. That'll get you right there. And I want you to ask you to do something else. Can you share the word about this podcast? Now, this is information that is good for any marriage, and one of my difficulties is making sure that as many people hear this message as possible. So share this on Facebook if you don't mind. Share it and go to the iTunes podcast and rate it for me. There are lots of ways you can help, and that's a way for you to help me pass the word along. I'm here to provide as much information as I can, but I need your help. I'm asking for you to help me share this and get more people listening so that more people can be affected by this, more people can improve their relationship, and we can make a shift in what happens to marriages in the world, not just right around you, not just your marriage, not just people in your state or your country, but in the whole world, just by getting the word out. So share with other people and say, you know what, this is about Save the Marriage, but it's really about marriage. I would appreciate it if you can help me spread the word as many ways as possible. Thank you. This is Lee Balcom, and I wish you the best as you continue to work to save and improve your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.